You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Wednesday, September 29th. This is The Christian Commute. I am your host, Seth Dunn. Let me tell you, the podcast is in bad shape. I think this is the first podcast in a week and a half. I did, in fact, drive to work today. And when I got discovered that some miscreant had borrowed my office while I was gone, a yet-to-be-identified miscreant, and this miscreant spilled a bunch of coffee in my office, and my desk was all sticky, and the good sticky notes were ruined. So I have the inferior sticky note. What brand are these? The ones I banned from the office? Arteza or something like that. I hate these sticky notes. It's fallen off of my steering wheel four times. But that's okay, because guess what? It's too dark to see anyway. Because it is 8:14. Long day at work. I knew I was going to have a long day. But I'm working from home tomorrow, so this is the Christian Commute for the week. I don't know if I'll do a weekend episode. You know, I called Brother William last week on Friday to get his Alabama pick for Southern Miss, and I was like, you know what, I'll do a show Friday night, I'll do a show Saturday. I didn't do one. But his pick was 52-7, and it was not, I think Southern Miss got 14, but Alabama did kill him. It was something like 48-14. So Brother William, very close on his Alabama pick, better pick than his Florida pick. He knew Southern Miss's quarterback was out, starting quarterback, and that they're real bad this year. Real, real bad. Southern Miss is an up-and-down team. You know, they have some really good years, but here lately, they've been having some really awful years. So that's the Alabama football update. No theme music. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Let's get on to the show proper. Guys, stuff has been happening, so I've been coming up with little show topics, and some of them are... They, you know, if I did a show every day, it would be, oh, this is late-breaking news type of stuff. But alas, I haven't been doing a show every day. But today's show topic may be a little obscure, but I think it's relevant. It's called Jared Longshore's Next Job. Jared Longshore's Next Job. Some of you know who that is, and a lot of you don't, but I'll explain it. I have a question on the inbox about what Jesus said to the thief on the cross, and as always, I have the Bible chapter review, and I'm going to get to that when I merge onto I-75. I'm in Studio C, in case anybody was wondering. I never intend to drive Studio C to work, but my wife blocks every other car in my driveway, so I end up driving this one. I want to drive Studio D a lot of times, but I don't get to. Oh, here we go. Merging on. And I've got so many cars now, I don't even remember what the studios are. I think Studio D's the Kia Soul, but who knows? Who knows? And by the way, I'm going to stop at Bucky's to get gas and get some brisket because my daughter loves brisket. And I haven't eaten dinner yet. So let's see if I can get through the Bible chapter review before I have that stop. We're in Matthew chapter 6, verses 16 through 18. Matthew chapter 6. Verses 16 through 18, continuing in the Sermon of the Mount, talking about two things which are often referred to as the quote-unquote spiritual disciplines, one being prayer and another being fasting. So Jesus has taught us how to pray, and he's also taught us how not to pray. In other words, like, don't be praying on the street using many words so people see you for the sake of being seen. So we get a similar message here when it comes to fasting. When you fast, so Jesus is presuming that people are fasting. He says, when you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. So why do people fast? It's really presupposed here in the text. There's really not an explanation of, well, this is why you fast. And there's not really an explanation of this is why you pray. It's just an assumption of these are things you're doing. And generally speaking, and I'm not going to exegete this for you throughout the rest of the Bible because it would be hard. I just want to mention this because sometimes we just talk through fasting. You fast to focus on God. Like, you withhold worldly, I don't want to say worldly pleasures, but even worldly necessities for yourself. I'm not going to eat because something, I am not satisfied, and I want God to satisfy this thing for me, and I want to line up with His will, and I'm not just going to sit and eat and be comfortable because that'll make me feel satisfied. No, I'm going to focus on God by withholding something, like, you know, food. I mean, it is food. Simply like, I'm going to fast from social media for Lent. Like, that is two unbiblical things, but okay. So, fasting. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others that they are fasting. What's a hypocrite? A hypocrite's a fake. It's a phony. It's an actor. They're pretending that they want to be close to God. They don't want to be close to God. They want to get approval from men. So they walk around with a somber look on their face, like, oh, I feel terrible. And they got a frown. It's like, oh. Oh, they look like Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler when he accidentally cuts his thumb in the deli and he's going through the whole restaurant. Look at me, I'm bleeding out. You know, it's a show. Jesus says, truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. Why do they have their reward in full? Because they've impressed who they want to impress. The people who they're saying, hey, look at me, look how sad I look. Look how dirty and disheveled I am. I didn't take care of myself this morning because I'm in such dire straits. I'm fasting to be close. I'm in dire spiritual circumstances. Fast to get close to the Lord. Look how holy I am. I'm the same guy who prays in the streets with many words. But Jesus says, don't be like that. Those guys have their reward in full. He says, when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face. In other words, take care of yourself. What we might say now is take a shower and use your Neutrogena face wash or your Johnson & Johnson face wash. You know, the oil stuff, the orange stuff with little beads in it, or the Kroger brand knockoff, whatever's cheaper. Take care of yourself. Get up, take a shower, put on your clothes in the morning, brush your hair, we might say. Now. Like, do it like it's a normal day. Like nothing else is going on. So what? So that it will not be obvious to others. Because you're not trying to bring others into whatever your thing is. Fast in secret. That's always gets me. These people call for, we're gonna call for a corporate fast, and we're all gonna, our church is fasting on this day with a corporate fast. It's a corporate fast. Quit telling about your fasts. Just fast. And I think in the Old Testament, I mean, don't quote me on this because I could have Googled it before I left. I'm just shooting from the hip. Maybe there were some times of corporate fasting in Israel, but I don't like this whole word. We're gonna fast, and we're gonna put it on the website that we're fasting. Stop that. Stop it. Fast in secret, dress nice, be normal. Here's what Jesus says. So it will not be obvious that others that you're fasting, but only to your Father in heaven. Father notices, and it's only obvious to Him, who is unseen. You can't even see the Father in heaven. You can see the people walking around the street. Oh, look at me, look at me. But no, you're doing it for God. It's for His benefit. God, who is unseen, He sees you. And it says, your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. You're looking for the favor of God, not the favor of men. And with that, I'm going to pause the Bible chapter, pause the show, because I got to get gas here at Bucky's and I'm going to get me a brisket sandwich. And then I'm going to get some brisket for my beloved daughter. And I guess I love all my kids, but there's just, you know, do you guys have just this one kid, like, oh, that's, I don't want to say my favorite, but like, oh, but that's my kid and she wants something, I'm going to get it for her. I mean, come to think of it, one of my sons likes the brisket too. This stuff is $17 a pound though. I mean, like, maybe I'll get a half a pound, get everybody one piece. It's a little treat. We'll see. But that's a tangent. I want to say my daughter, one of the other daughters, not the one who wants the brisket, has been using my phone to record her voice on my voice recorder app. So this is fair warning. Not that you'd get it if I made this mistake, that I'll go home and in a tired stupor upload a show that's my daughter singing one of her made-up songs into the phone. I hope not. But those are the pitfalls of the Christian commute. I'm out of practice. I'm out of practice. I could be doing it wrong. Listen, I already started this day off wrong. I drove to Calhoun without my computer. And you know what I did? I went down to my basement. I got my computer. I unhooked it. And then I left it there. Because that's what's going on with me. Anyway, so here I am at Bucky's with the 100 zillion gas pumps. Poor Love's truck stop across the street with a little Burger King and Subway. It was like poor little Love's truck stop and their 8 pumps. So when I come back, we will start the inbox portion of the show. So be ready for that. All right, and I'm back. And brisket is up. It's not $16.99, it's $18.99. Guys, everything is up if you can get it. But let's talk about someone who you can always get to, if you will, Jesus, because he died and rose again. We're going to talk. Where's my sticky note? All right, I threw my note down. So this is in Luke. This is what Jeff from Northwest Georgia is asking about. He's asking about in Luke, and he gave the chapter and verse, but I threw my sticky note down. So here it is. Jeff from Northwest Georgia is asking about Luke 23:43. And this is where Jesus is on the cross. Where in the world am I? I've taken a wrong turn, but it's okay because I'm actually going towards my other warehouse and I need to look at something there. So we'll just continue with Jeff's question until I get there. Jesus is hanging on the cross with two thieves. And one is hurling abuse at him. He's like, "If you're really the Son of God, get us off this cross." And the other one's being nice to Jesus and saying, "Hey, me and you deserve what we're getting, but this man's innocent." And he asked Jesus, he says, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." So he's recognizing that Jesus is the Messiah, even though Jesus is being executed on the cross. Where many people who should have recognized him as the Messiah are scorning him. And here I am at my warehouse, and I don't see what I was looking for. So that's that. Well, nice to know my warehouse is still here. I never come to this warehouse. And Jesus very famously says to the thief on the cross, "Today you will be with me in paradise." And there is some debate over whether Jesus says, "Truly I say to you, today, comma, you will be with me in paradise." In other words, saying, "I'm telling you this today, comma, you will be with me in paradise at some future time." Or if Jesus is saying, "Truly I say to you, comma, today you will be with me in paradise." In other words, you will be in paradise with me on this day. And people argue about that. Which did he mean? What's the proper translation? Where do you put the comma? Because here's the deal, y'all. Koine Greek. Is it Koine or Koine? I took two classes. I should be able to pronounce it. Koine Greek. And classic Greek, for that matter. And they don't have quotation marks and commas and all the stuff we do. So when you see quotation marks and commas and stuff like that in the Bible, it's because the English translation people have put them in there because we're translating in English, and they belong there, but they're not really there in the Greek. So we have to look for context, and we have to look at the verbs, the adverbs, and the nouns and the subjects, because we know what those things are in the text. Here's the thing. Jesus is saying, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." In other words, he's telling that guy that he's going to be in paradise with him that day, today. He's not telling him, like, "I'm telling you this today." And by the way, does that make sense? When you tell people things, when else do you tell them what you're telling them but right then? Jesus wouldn't say, like, I'll tell you tomorrow. I have something important to say. Or remember I told you this yesterday? I mean, Jesus is talking to the guy. Why would he say, I tell you today? Well, what's he trying to sell him, a used car? Like, I tell you today, you need to get in this used car right now. Now, so it doesn't make any sense for the text. Even, I mean, the Greek ultimately bears it out, and I'm not going to go into it, but it doesn't even make any sense to say, I'm telling you this today, you will be with me in paradise. No, he's saying, today you will be with me in paradise. That's, today you will be with me in paradise. As in, this day. Because they're dying. So Jesus is, the guy said, when you come into your kingdom, remember me. And Jesus said, you're going to be with me in paradise today. Because they're dying and they're going to go to Abraham's bosom. And then Jesus is going to have his resurrection and do a lot more. This verse comes up a lot. Or this pericope comes up a lot in debates about baptismal justification. Because you got Church of Christ people who say you have to be baptized to be saved. Like, unless you're dunked under the water, you're not going to go to heaven when you die. And all the Baptists are just pointed. Look! He's dunked at... Hey! That guy wasn't baptized. Because Jesus isn't getting down off the cross and saying, hold on, y'all, we got to baptize him. So that's where this comes up a lot. And I think the debate between the today, the part of it, where do you put the comma, also comes up because of people who believe in soul sleep. Which I think would be Seventh-day Adventists and Jehovah's Witnesses, which are aberrant cultish groups. If Jesus is telling the guy that you're going to be with me in paradise today, well, he's obviously not in some unconscious soul sleep. He's going to be in paradise with Jesus, consciously aware of it. So people want to say, no, Jesus was just telling him on that day. Jesus was just telling the guy on, you know, which day he was telling him on. Which, going back, doesn't make any sense. Have you ever said that to anybody? Truly I say to you, today, Jeff, that I'm going to go to Bucky's tomorrow for more brisket. I mean, why would I say that? I'm talking to you now. Is he going to tell him later? They're about to die. So that's, you know, they're up on the cross dying, and that's why he's telling him that. And is there a rub to that, Jeff? I don't know. But we'll see. Did Jesus die right then? I have to go back and read it because he hung on the cross for a long time. All right. Ah! Somebody's driving by very loudly. All right. That'll end the Bible chapter review as I get back home. And hey, listen. People driving crazy on the roads. If you've ever seen any of the Mad Max movies, that's where we are because we're running out of stuff. I've talked about ocean freight all the time on the show. Guys, I import stuff, and it is hard to get it. Like, the supply chain is broken down. Listen, I just went and got this lemonade I'm drinking. I'm going to take a pause and drink it. And it's in the generic styrofoam cup like you get at a burger stand on the beach. You guys have all seen these cups that have the pastel blue, and there's a seagull on it that you get at mom-and-pop restaurants. It's not the Bucky's branded cup, because usually when you go to a gas station, you get the branded cup. They're out of the big cups. So now they're like a Walmart buying cups. That's how you know people are out of stuff. People are out of stuff everywhere. Good luck getting new stuff if you need it. But let's talk about Jared Longshore, who needs a new job. Jared Longshore's next job. So, you Calvinist people, probably, especially you Calvinist Baptists, you probably know who Jared Longshore is. He was one of Tom Askell's associate pastors. I think their church is Grace Baptist Church, but isn't that the name of every Calvinistic church? Grace Church, Grace Community Church, Grace Baptist Church, Grace, 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 Irresistible. They ought to call it Irresistible Grace Church. Anyway, Tom Askell is the founder, the founder of Founders. So there is a network of 1689 London Baptist Confession Baptists who are also Southern Baptists. It's like a little affinity group within the Southern Baptists called the Founders. And the reason they're named the Founders is because the founders of the Southern Baptist Convention in 1845 were all Calvinistic. And now we've gotten away from that as Baptists, and we're into nickels and noses and Walt, you know, Billy Graham asking you to come down the aisle just as you are. But this, what you might call Hobbes-Rogers decisionism, that's all from the 60s, dude. 200 years ago, Baptists, Southern Baptists at least, were straight up Calvinistic. So the Founders is a network where all the Calvinistic Baptists can be listed on a church, and it's like, hey, this is where to come to if you don't want to go to I'll Walk Baptist Church. You look on Founders. And they have their little conferences. Because, listen, all these groups have their conferences, and their little, they have their podcasts, their blog, and their conferences. So that's what they do. And Tom Askell has been very notable as being anti-woke and trying to warn people about the wokeness and cultural Marxism that's going on in the Southern Baptist Convention, which I don't really think that has anything to do with Calvinism. Anyway, Calvinism's not like, hey, there's woke people running around. Like, I don't have time to argue with Rick Patrick about predestination. There's woke people everywhere. We got to stop. So I think that's where Tom Askell is. And Jared Longshore has been his right-hand man on his podcasts and stuff like that. Podcasts, blogs, documentaries, whatever. And it came out the other day that Jared Longshore was no longer with the Founders. It was like, well, what happened? And people said, was it moral failure? What happened? What happened? And Jared Longshore came out and said, basically, that he's come to the conviction that we should baptize the babies. He's become a paedo-Baptist. So he's no longer a Baptist. That's why he's not going to be on staff at Tom Askell's Baptist Church or on the staff of Founders Ministries, because it's a Baptist ministry and a Baptist church. So I ask you, what should be or what will be Jared Longshore's next job? I'm going to make a bold prediction. It's going to be Presbyterian pastor. And here's the thing. Should it be? Is he qualified? Because he's just changed a major doctrine. Baptism is one of the two church ordinances. And if this guy has been to seminary, I think he's got a PhD. This guy's been to seminary and he's just now figured out that you should baptize babies. Maybe don't make him a pastor of your baby baptizing church. Now, obviously, we know on the Christian Commute that baptizing babies is wrong and Jared Longshore is wrong and he's become theologically errant. But it just got me to thinking. I'm not trying to pick on him. I don't know how much money he makes, but he's got his education and experience, professional experience, if you will, in pastoring. He's not going to come down to my plant and get a job making $70,000, $80,000 a year because he has experience as a Baptist pastor and podcaster. I don't care if he has a PhD. But like, there's the plant. There's the $15 an hour jobs out there. Nothing wrong with those jobs. They're good jobs. But you ain't going to make $60,000, $70,000 out there, right? But if I had to guess, I would say he would just move on to pastoring a Presbyterian church. But how is he going to be a spiritual authority over these people? He's not new to Christianity, but he just now figured out that ordinance. I don't want to repeat myself. So has this man shown himself qualified to teach doctrine and refute unsound doctrine? Whatever that church says the unsound doctrine is. And I think the answer to that is no. But I think what you'll find is that guy's going to end up a pastor somewhere. And you know, good for him, in a way, for following his convictions and not saying, well, I'm just going to get this Baptist paycheck until I can get a Presbyterian job. I don't know what he's got lined up. I'm just saying, this is not a prophecy, it's a prediction. I'll bet that will happen. And I saw that, and it just didn't sit right with me. Not that he's a Presbyterian now, because that doesn't sit right with me. Nobody. It doesn't sit right with me that anybody's a Presbyterian. But I'm sitting there thinking, you shouldn't be a pastor. He shouldn't have been a Baptist pastor all this time. He wasn't grounded in our scriptural beliefs about baptism. But it reminded me of a conversation that I had at that barbecue contest that I'd already kind of mentioned to you in my felt needs sermon. I was talking to the pastor who's planning, through the Assemblies of God, a new church in Cartersville called Awake Church. So that's, we're awake. It's Awake Church. Hey, I want to go to a sleep church. How about that? I want to not... Friends, we're gathered here today to worship God. Please turn in your Bibles to Numbers chapter 5. And the tribe of Zebulun had 680,000 people, 400,000 fighting men, and 50,000 women and children. You know, it's a sleep Baptist church. No, it's a wake Baptist church. They got Holy Ghost fire there and an orange logo. Okay, but my point is not to make fun of the silly name of their church. I met the guy, and because I'd kind of scoped out the church in town, and I said, who's your planning organization? Who's your sending organization? Do you have a sponsor? And then he's like, yeah, it's Assemblies of God. And then he mentions to me, he goes, well, I used to be a Church of God pastor, like Cleveland, Tennessee Church of God. And I was like, all right, what's the difference between the two? Because I really, I've read both their websites, and they're both Pentecostal churches who baptize by immersion, and I didn't quite know the difference. And he explained to me that the Church of God Cleveland, Tennessee has a more Episcopal ecclesiology, and that the conference or the denomination appoints the pastors to the local churches, where the Assemblies of God are more like Baptist churches in that the churches are independent and get their own pastors. But what he also said to me was that the Assemblies of God believes in progressive sanctification. Like, you get saved and then you live your life being further sanctified towards Christ, which I think is an orthodox biblical belief. That's what I believe, progressive sanctification. You know, I didn't get saved and all of a sudden I'm perfect and sinless. But then what he said to me, he says, the Church of God, he said, you might not find anybody who'll say this, but it's in their books. You know, it's in their doctrinal statement. They believe in this instant holiness sanctification. So they get saved, and that there's at some point that they're totally holy. And that comes, by the way, from the holiness movement, or the Wesleyan holiness movement. So when you think of a Wesleyan holiness movement, you need to think about Wesleyanism being able to lose your salvation, and holiness, well, if you're saved, you're being holy. So the holiness movement, you get people who get baptized 5 times a year, right? Because they go to church on Sunday, get baptized. They go out drinking Saturday night, lose their salvation, come to church Sunday and get baptized again. That's being extreme an example, but that's how the holiness tradition, if you want to call something that was invented in 1920 a tradition, or at least Pentecostal holiness from Azusa Street, and Wesley goes back way further than that, if you want to call that a tradition. And, you know, I was just talking to the guy, but I thought later, I'm like, well, what business do you have being a pastor in this one denomination and then this jump into this other similar but different denomination? Your job is just pastor, dude. What's your conviction? And I already did that whole podcast about felt need sermons and how a congregation or a group of Christians who gets felt need sermons don't develop dogmas and convictions. But not only that, from the perspective, you just have guys that's their job. And they're not dogmatic about their beliefs. Guys, if the Presbyterian Church America near me called me tomorrow, and it's the church I go to on the 4th of July because I always want to worship Jesus on the 4th of July, not America. So if my friend Jody called me and said, hey, we got this big donor who gave all this money to our Presbyterian church here in Cartersville, right down the street from your house. It's Riverside Community Church. They're a community church. Whether they're not Presbyterian, they're a community. You ain't fooling anybody, Jody. You could walk in, you'd think it was a Baptist church because they have a baptistry. Because they meet in the Seventh-day Adventist church, and it looks just like a Baptist church. He's got his baptistry back there. I'm like, no, no, no. You're Presbyterians. You're not fooling me. Anyway, he could call me and say, hey, man, somebody just donated $2 million to our church plant, and we could give you $100,000 a year on a, like, you can work here for 10 years, $100,000 a year, because they want us to have another preacher, another staff person. I know you're a theologian. You went to seminary. I know you can preach. And I think, man, making $100,000 a year to be a pastor, to preach, oh, I'd love to jump at that, because let me tell you something. If I ever quit my job and took my little New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary paper off the wall of my office and started looking for a job with it, I ain't going to make no $100,000 a year. Because just like I don't care about Jared Longshore's PhD at my plant, the church doesn't care that I've been an accountant for almost 20 years and that I can make ace spreadsheets like nobody's business and know about databases and can tell you, you know, how much a square foot of carpet costs. They don't care. Because I don't have any progressive experience in that. They'd be like, oh, yeah. Here's some pizza party gift cards. Why don't you go run the youth ministry for $37,000 a year? I'm like, no, thank you. By the way, guys, that's a problem. I don't want to go on a tangent, but, dude, get on sbc.net and just start looking at some of the associate pastor jobs on there. Pastor of discipleship, pastor of families. Look at what they make. And, like, I look at that, and I'm like, I couldn't support my family on that. That salary is below my education experience. And then I was thinking to myself, why would I want some guy so far below my education and experience in charge of something so important? Like, that's not even the median income of my community. Like, what? I'm not trying to define how spiritual and important people are in the body of Christ by how much they make, because we should not do that. But listen. If you're a 50-year-old guy and you're making $40,000 a year and you went to college, give me a break. You're doing something wrong. 50-year-old guys who went to college make a lot of money. I know. How do I know that? Because I make budgets for a living. Anyway, if the Presbyterian Church said, come over, $100,000 a year, I'm not magically going to become a Presbyterian. I'm like, no, I can't do that. That sounds like a wonderful job. I love you guys. I like going to your church service, but I really can't cotton to sprinkling babies. Sorry, can't do it. Because I have convictions. I have convictions and a job. And my job, whatever it is, can't contradict my convictions. And again, good for Jared Longshore for not having a job that contradicted his convictions. But it's almost like if you what if somebody was married to the same woman for 20 years and they were high school sweethearts and they're so in love and they're all over each other and they thought they were so great, and then one day you meet the guy, he's like, I'm married to this other woman now. I got divorced yesterday, but I'm head over heels for this woman. Really? In a day? So I have a real problem with pastors who jump from denomination to denomination, because here's the thing. If you're not so grounded with which to begin, you shouldn't be a pastor. Because you do not need to, as J.D. Hall has said, trade your doctrines like Pokemon cards. And I'm sure Jared Longshore has thought long and hard about this doctrine and agonized over it and studied it. I'm not saying he was being flippant. I'm saying that guy has no business being a pastor in any denomination, because he just came to his conviction about a church ordinance last week. I don't care how much experience he has standing before somebody at a pulpit and saying words or visiting sick people in a hospital, etc., etc. Because the dogma has to match up. If it's not about dogma, or if dogma is not a part of it, well, it's just going through the motions. It's just a bunch of management. And, you know, I got to say that's bothersome and worrisome to me for any denomination. And I think, really, guys, that's why we have so many professional pastors out there who it's just a job. So those are my thoughts tonight on the Christian commute. Jared Longshore is not a next job. So we'll wait and see. And here's the thing. If he becomes a Presbyterian pastor, I'm not going to call down there. He doesn't need to be a pastor at your church. I don't. What you Presbyterians, you can do whatever you want. Baby sprinklers. I do not approve of you. You're gonna answer to God for your baby sprinkling. Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Sorry, I never have them anymore, guys. You guys know I'm autistic. I love to do the same thing every day and getting in and be in my routine. That's just, whatever I'm doing every day is my routine. And then this is also something that's really great for me because I get to think through the Bible and talk about theological matters and talk about the gospel and talk about theology and apologetics to people. I love to do this. And yes, I could do it sitting at home in my basement. I could do it. But guys, one of the reasons I've been working at home is just I'm so busy. I'm just so covered up and so busy that I don't have time to stop working and take 30 minutes to do this, even sitting in the chair. I'm also coaching my son's 6 and under flag football team. We're 2-0, in case anybody was wondering. And then I go to my other son and daughter's flag football practice. So there's a lot going on in the Dunghouse. There's a lot of parenting going on. A lot of quality time with the kids. So something has to get cut out. And unfortunately, it's everyday Christian commutes. So I want to, listen, eventually I know I'll get back to going to work every day. You know, knock on wood. You know, we're not supposed to say, oh, how about this? Lord willing, I know I'll get back. What's the Bible say? Don't say you're going to do this, that, and the other tomorrow. You could die. But I know in the very human sense that one day I'll get back to going to work every day. COVID will be over. I'll be less busy. Things will be restructured and kind of back to normal, whatever normal is. And when that happens, I plan on doing my daily Christian commutes. But until that time, hopefully, I'll get one or two in a week. I hope you enjoy them as I enjoy doing them. But for now, I'm going to roll up to the post office here, get my neighborhood mail, then listen to the Braves in the playoffs. God bless you guys. Don't forget to send your questions, and I haven't got many in a while. Can't blame you. To SethDunn88@gmail.com, SethDunn88@gmail.com, or dial 470-315-0875. But always remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved. There's the tagline. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to SethDunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.